Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hi, this is Mark O'Connell, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Listener questions, then?
Let's go.
Rattle through some of these to round off, which is probably going to approach 2 hours.
I hope the first one is, how are you?
The first one, I've not proofread them again, folks. I tend not to do that, do I? I would like to know the Andy/Dan view, and we might have covered this, on the supposed evidence of NHI found nearby in a nearby star system, artificial radio signal from 2019, and or artificial light detected on the same planet, allegedly. That was from Ken. So hi, Ken. I think we kind of covered that one earlier, Dan, but just to recap on that whole supposed evidence found in nearby star systems, radio signals, whatnot.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to talk on it.
No.
In your space. The signal BCL1, it was thought to be anomalous in some way. So scientists are going through it, trying to check it and kind of scratch off the possible prosaic explanations. In recent weeks, it's been pushed by Simon Holland in various outlets, a YouTuber who, you know, Fidus, he has a good pedigree, kind of working with Horizons, a really good BBC program where they produced really reputable documentaries kind of founded on good information and stuff like that. But to the claims that, you know, something's definitely going to be announced based on the BCL1 signal, I actually managed through a colleague, Ross from Event Horizons on YouTube, a really great channel, very science-based. They always talk to astronomers and stuff like that. They actually happen to know the director of Breakthrough Listen, Dr. Andrew Simeon, and they got in touch with him and just asked him directly, is there anything to this? His response was that the story was untrue and the story was nonsense and not at all true. That was the sentence that was said. So he could be hiding something if you want to go there and kind of play it that way. He could be downplaying it, but yeah, it's been phooey by the very director of the project that was said to be saying that it was going to happen. And then that gets conflated with the other things, like it finding lights in star systems and so on and so forth. Pretty much what we said earlier. This stuff gets conflated and trotted out time and time again. It's never going to be aliens until it is aliens. So just wait for the experts, I guess.
Mantis people.
Mantis people.
Goodbye Blue had a couple of questions. The first one we answered because it was, what are your thoughts on Danny Sheehan's recent interviews on the Julian Dorey podcast? The first one was on the mountain bases and stuff, and we talked about that. The second part is the somewhat confusing stance between saying that the UEPDA is essential to get passed, but also seeming to question the intentions of elements of the intelligence community for suddenly being more forthcoming. I'm struggling to formulate my question clearly, but I just feel there's a contradiction there, and perhaps it's simply down to the fact that every person that is deeply involved in this has their own perspective and set of connections, and therefore insight into what's really going on, and ultimately whether there is controlled disclosure happening, and who is in fact pulling the strings to make it happen above the public people we all know about. So yeah, I hadn't seen that particular quote, but Goodbye Blue is saying that, you know, there was a stance, the UAP disclosure that's essential, but there's an element around being sus, or as the kids would say, or suspicious about the intelligence community being more forthcoming all of a sudden. It's a hard one, isn't it? And this is something I spoke to a few folks about who question. Dahlia, for example, on the listener call in from Chickenlandia. Hello, Dahlia. Really distrusting of anyone to do with the CIA, especially because of our heritage and background and what the CIA has done and what it stands for. And then I use the example of, well, what about a Jim Semivan when he's doing this work? Is it just a blanket distrust, or is that not potentially someone, a person, working for a historically distrustful organization? People know what the CIA has done, aspects of it anyway, over the decades. It's not done a lot of nice things to its own people even. But is that a fair point then, Dan? Yeah, that there's, and I think me and you, everyone, we do this as well, to be fair. You will criticize one aspect of, or critique one aspect of the UFO topic or an element of it, but then on the other hand, we'll talk positively about something because it suits a narrative, an opinion, an agenda. And it's very difficult to not do in this, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we always say you've got to try and separate all these claims out from people, you know, because a person makes a claim, it doesn't mean the CIA is making a claim, or because the CIA office released a statement, it doesn't mean that everyone in the CIA agrees with that statement. These organizations are made up of individuals who have their own ideas and opinions about what has been done. Jim, it's funny you mentioned Jim. For me, I feel like Jim could be a little more transparent and you get a bit more trust, because when he's asked about what the CIA did in the past and, you know, some of the lesser stuff that they've been involved in, he just flat out denies it, most of it anyway, and suggests that there's no way they could be doing that in the modern day. I get it. As an employee of that organization, you have to kind of toe the line there. But at the same time, I think being open to the possibility that that could be wrong would go a long way for him. The quote that the listener is talking about is, I brought it up earlier, where Danny kind of alludes that, oh yeah, suddenly after all this movement, there are government officials coming forward going, oh no, yeah, we want to talk now. We feel bad about what we've been doing behind closed doors, and we swear we'll tell you everything. But then again, they're saying, well, we're not going to reveal everything. We're just going to reveal some of what we know. There's some stuff that we really can't reveal what those are. And I agree, you know, I think we have to remember that these people took an oath to their country and not to us. They're not out to break their oath and to go to jail over it and stuff like that. But they do seem to genuinely want this conversation to start happening with the public.
Yeah.
But not give us everything, because we don't have that, you know, there's the three magic words there, right? That we don't have the need to know.
Yeah.
Hat tip to Ross and Bryce over there.
I bet if we sat in the room, and I've said something similar before, Dan, but if you got to sit with one of these really high ranking CIA guys who knew loads of stuff to do with the UFO topic, and they said, okay, we're for a minute, just me and you, Dan, going to sit down in this room and I'm going to tell you what I know, and you'd be like, yeah, go for it, I bet there would be elements of what they would say that you would go, ah, I wish he hadn't told me that. I'd rather forget that and not know that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even down to I spoke to someone before who, for the UK, they're the person who sits kind of by the red button. And it would have been their job that if any country fired nukes at the UK, it would have been their job to get in touch with the Prime Minister to be told to press that red button. And he said, in the kind of run of conversation, I was like, how close have you come to having to do that? And he said, I can't go into specifics, but it gets close more than you'd comfortably like to know. And I think that is exactly what we're saying, right?
God help anyone more phoning Keir Starmer to do that. Like,
but yeah, it speaks to essentially what we're getting at here, that there are just things that, you know, it would keep some people up at night to know that potentially every day that if they said, oh yeah, 10 times a day, we almost press that red button. You'd be worrying every day about it then. Like, is it now? There are people who would obsess over it.
Dan, next question is, we're going to pause for a second for it. The listeners won't know because I guarantee you won't have watched it. I haven't either, but I've just managed to find the thing. Cosmo Warrior said, thoughts on the brackets yawn Battle for Disclosure documentary with Stephen Greer, Billy Carson, etc. I've not seen the trailer. What I'm going to do, Dan, is pause this now and we're going to come back and discuss the trailer, right?
Okay, sure.
Okay, we have literally just spent the minute and 38 seconds watching the trailer, not discussed it. I just asked Dan, are you done? He said yes. Okay, so Dan, we've got a trailer there. Stephen Greer, Billy Carson, Tim Burchett, Sean Ryan, who right now has one of the biggest podcasts on the planet, is there commenting. Michael Herrera, who the guys in the Discord chat will love to see. So, brand new witnesses is something that's said really early on there, okay? And all I'm thinking, and I'm trying not to be negative about this, is at a time where we have congressional hearings, genuine whistleblowers coming out, and this isn't a dig at any of these former military personnel that are on here, would you go through a documentary like this? It's called Battle for Disclosure, folks, right? And give away that kind of information when you could do it on the public stage? I don't know. It looks like what I thought that trailer would look like before I watched it.
I mean, we spoke earlier about Disclosure Day and, you know, reading the room and being aware of your audiences and kind of aiming properly. And the Star Wars effects in this just immediately, you know, they make me want to switch off. I didn't. I watched the whole thing. The actual information that they're talking about in the trailer, you know, projects run illegally, using security as a cover, that kind of stuff. Yeah, cool, fine. That's all kind of in line with what we've heard. But to your point, there's a bit in the trailer where Greer points out Congress didn't have the precise info. I mean, we've been told that they were given the precise info. But at the same time, if you're criticizing Congress for not having that precise info, but then you're only keeping these new witnesses in for your documentary, it's kind of like there's a tension there. But there's, you know, you should be pushing those witnesses to Congress if you think that Congress needs to be shown the precise info.
Right. There's my main issue, though, with Greer and folks like this. And again, I would still love to have Stephen Greer on for a conversation, but I don't think he would bother. He wouldn't want to. He doesn't owe me anything. Probably doesn't know who I am. But Stephen Greer seems to have this thing of, they're all wrong, but I'm not. They don't know. They're getting the wrong information. I've got the right information, though. That really frustrates me with Stephen Greer. And that's the way he comes across in this again. It's that whole, I know the full story. I know all the truth. You all don't, but I'm going to help you get there. Don't listen to anybody else except me. That frustrates me. There's an element of ego that comes across that I find really off-putting. However, Dan, it's available on the 10th of December across multiple platforms, including Prime Video, all that kind of stuff. Dan, I will pay for us both to watch that, and we can record a bonus episode. We won't send that on the free feeds, because I think that might be more of a discussion for behind a paywall, folks. Not that you're going to miss out on anything groundbreaking, I don't think, but let's keep that as a
bonus. I don't know, that monolith story sound like I want to see the monolith story. And this is the thing, right? For all of the ego that seems to come with Greer's stuff, there are people who are trying to present stories.
Yep.
And to whether you dig into them and you find out that they're fake or nonsense or whatever, you have to take in the information and give it the time of day. Otherwise, you're falling victim to your bias. You know, we often talk about with Bob Lazar. Like, yeah, sure, based on the evidence that I've read, I lean towards negative with Bob. But I'll never not listen to something that he says, because that would be me falling victim to my bias. And I could miss out on a piece of information that completely tips my opinion on its head. So you kind of, you know, it's hard because there's a lot of information in this field. And it's hard to parse. But when it's packaged like this and it's just like, you know, I grew up watching UFO documentaries, I'm into this stuff, then I'm going to give it the time of day on the off chance that there is a small nugget, even if there's 2 seconds of something amazing and genuine in there, it would be worth my time. But I do wish they'd drop the Star Wars font and stop just the mudslinging, you know, be constructive, help the subject.
6 or 7 years ago or 10 years ago, I would have watched that and been like, oh, this is so cool. And maybe a little bit more erring of that, wary of that stuff now. But we'll watch it, Dan, and we'll chat about it at the time. We'll give it a fair go.
I will also say, just before you get to the next question, that last quote in the trailer, I my eyes rolled back into my head as hard as possible quote? When the guy said, this is the most secret shit you've ever heard of. Government agents don't talk like that. I know enough by this point to know that it's just not. But again, that guy might be full of bullshit, and there might be 10 others in the documentary who are presenting amazing stories.
Does that not say he's like a former sergeant?
I think it did at the bottom.
So just, I don't have an issue with that. That just could just be normal guy speak. That's just somebody who's really nervous. Like,
just maybe, but it just comes off to me as like, if I ran up to you and I had, you know, black shades on and I was like, I'm going to tell you the most secret shit you've ever heard of, like, just run in the other direction.
Flip side of that, I suppose, just purely because I'd finished a YouTube video earlier, the John Oliver UFO video came on from the Daily, is it Daily
Show? Yeah.
No,
it's just last John Oliver. Tonight, John Oliver.
Yeah. And he joked and laughed about, he found it really odd that a pilot would say, oh my gosh, when talking about the TikTok.
That is
video.
True.
And he was like, pilots don't talk like that. Because he said he would say something like, Jesus backflipping Christ or something like that, you know.
I remember that.
So yeah, let's be fair, Colin. But yeah, so interesting. We'll watch that, Dan, in December.
Yeah, we'll give it a fair shout.
It's a Christmas bonus episode for people to enjoy. Peter says, hi Peter, in the recent pods with Sarah Gam and Stephen Brown, the conversation very much drifted away from the nuts and bolts, flying saucers and crash retrievals towards more esoteric subjects such as the role of consciousness and spirituality in the phenomenon. Sarah is, for example, not only an astrophysicist but also a Reiki master. Also, Lou Elizondo would appear to be the epitome of a nuts and bolts investigator looking at actual threats, has also admitted to being deeply religious, capable of remote viewing, and plagued by glowing orbs in his home. Quite funny when you read it like that. Do you both detect a shift in the current narrative from all parties involved, away from physical flying saucers to the very nature of reality itself? And is this the reason why disclosure is being so strenuously resisted? Dan?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. For me, I've always been into the woo side of stuff. So whilst I acknowledge that the main conversations are starting to widen a little bit to include stuff like remote viewing and orbs and, you know, things like that, for me, it's always been there. And it's something that every year in the conversation, the aperture almost widens to include a little bit more woo. So this kind of stuff is stuff that I've been, you know, looking at and reading about and listening to interviews with various people about for a long while. So it's not as jarring for me. But every time I hear it, I do wonder what people outside this subject think about that kind of stuff. Because, you know, when Sarah Gam came forward, a big deal was made out of her spirituality and that kind of angle by Stephen Greenstreet, and he tried to use it to discredit her. But obviously, if you're into these more esoteric things, it's not as necessarily discrediting as someone like Stephen would have thought. But at the same time, there are people out there that would find that discrediting. And I mean, personally, as someone that loves this woo stuff, I'm encouraged that it's kind of being brought into the conversation, because consciousness and spirituality, it kind of gets at the same stuff using different language. You know, we say religion. Religion is just something that science hasn't defined yet that is supernatural, that is accepted. We just call that religion, and we worship a guy in the sky or whatever. And yeah, it's fine now because it's religion. It's not something kooky. But then you talk about spirituality, or if I said to you, thinning the veil, if I said to you, the veil's getting thinner, you know, your eyes will probably roll in the back of your head. But then all the person could mean by that is that more people are discussing it than ever, and therefore the woo is becoming normalized. So there are phrases and ways of talking about these things with language that isn't so full of woo, and I feel like we're trying to push in that direction.
Yeah. I think the worry for a lot of folks is it's like a game of pass the parcel, Dan, and you feel you're getting close to the prize at the bottom. You know, you can start to hear something shake and rattle, but we're going to unwrap the last thing, nothing's there, and somebody brings in a new prize for us to start again on. And it's just like that's the never-ending cycle. But it does seem that people are getting more open to those conversations. They're at least happening. I'm trying to be more open with them. But I think that's why when I spoke to Seragam, I tried to format, because there was so much to put in, but I tried to make it that the first half was more nuts and boltsy, and then move into the, let's go back and look at the spiritual stuff and try and weave it back in, because I think otherwise it can be too jarring for a lot of folks to be like, near death, oh, you worked at the task force, oh, you started seeing entities, oh, no, you saw dead people, oh, okay, your mediumship, you contacted blue aliens. There's a way to kind of have that people are just like, nah, like tap out. But I agree, there is a conversation there worth having, because it's too easy to outright dismiss it. Because there are plenty of folks who, if you look at the first half of me talking to Sarah being nuts and bolts, the second half being woo, there are people who would much rather hear the woo, and they think the nuts and bolts stuff's bullshit. So there are people on both sides. So you've got to kind of pay them both, yeah.
And there was a, in Lou's X space, he referenced Jim Lakatsky and how Jim, well, Lou's words were, it would be unwise to suggest UAP are purely physical. That's a really woo statement. He said it in a really nuts and bolts way, but it's a really woo statement. And he cited Lakatsky and what, you know, everything Lakatsky said about the phenomenon, which is, you know, it broadens the aperture on the conversation crazily into seeing things that aren't there in the kitchen at Skinwalker Ranch, to these ethereal beings and black spots that appear on in the middle of the road that kind of make you feel cold and full of fear and things like that. That gets the stuff that we refer to as, you know, demonic and things like that. But we're never going to figure that stuff out if we just kind of go, it's demonic, and we're comfortable with that word, because really that word doesn't mean anything. It's just a placeholder for something we don't know, similar to something like dark matter. Dark matter isn't evil. You could call it evil matter if you wanted to, but it's just the unknown, and the unknown is scary to people. But just like we did when humanity started sailing the seas, we didn't fall off the edge of the map. We found new worlds, and we have the world that we have now. So we kind of have to look at these things that are uncomfortable to look at to figure out if they're real or not.
Dan, grab a drink. I'm going to start reading the next question from Max.
Okay.
I was listening to your interview with Kevin Wright and heard you talking about the upcoming documentary series or documentaries. A thought occurred to me while reading Imminent by Luis Elizondo about this topic of movies and series. We seem to get two kinds, documentary and sci-fi. Most of the public doesn't seem to care about documentaries and UFO news and testimonials. They, however, love sci-fi. The problem with this is that it's too far in the direction of fantasy. I think what we are missing is a third type of entertainment, one that could actually move the masses to react and respond to the phenomenon. That would be historical drama. Think Apollo 13. Only science and history nerds will watch a documentary about this space mission, but everybody will watch a movie with Tom Hanks and amazing special effects. While reading Lou talking about historical events pertaining to the phenomenon and thinking about what James Fox accomplished with his documentaries, I imagined the book Imminent as a Hollywood dramatic film with a full cinematic treatment. In my mind, it was incredible and compelling. The entire history of UAP was brought to life as I were there seeing it with my own eyes. I was there for the US Capitol experience. I was there with Lonnie Zamora in the desert. I was there in Phoenix with my neighbours looking up at the massive craft. If we want people to care, they have to feel. I don't need to hear about the five observables. I don't need to hear about the five observables. I need to experience them. That is what Hollywood does best. Sorry for the wrong email. I like that, Max, and I butchered it reading it out. Apologies. It's just getting late. But Dan, you like your movies and stuff like I do as well. What are your thoughts on that?
So my immediate thoughts is this is what Tom DeLonge was trying to do with To the Stars and Secret Machines and things like that, to parcel these real bits of information in ways that would entertain people, but they would come to know the truth of the matter. Go read Secret Machines. That's, you know, being made into a TV series. I can't wait. Like, it could just be Dan Brown, you know, the Da Vinci Code, but with UFOs. It stands to be something
what,
that...
What style of series would you want it to look like, though? Because I get the point Max is making that, for example, I've not watched it for decades, and I should go back, actually. I used to, as a little kid, watch a Roswell movie quite a lot. I don't know if it was just called Roswell. I can't remember the name of. I think there was a Scottish actor in it. I'm not sure. But I used to watch that loads as a kid. Probably not made for me. I think it was much more like grown up and maybe dry. But are you looking at a Francis Ford Coppola type, you know, 3-hour epic, a Christopher Nolan type, Oppenheimer type movie? How would you make
it? It would be. Like that? I mean, it would essentially be Close Encounters of the Third Kind meets Enemy of the State. That would be where I'd want it to hit. Something that included the kind of family angle where, you know, people of all ages could go see it. But I would want it to feel, I say Enemy of the State because there's a chase aspect to it and it's really gripping. And you want to know what happens next. You don't want to switch off, right? So it would need to feel, it would need to draw you in as much as that kind of movie did. So I don't think slow and plodding like, you know, Francis Ford Coppola or something like that, or, you know, Nolan's an amazingly technical, creative filmmaker, but his stuff is really slow and people, it's not for everyone. It needs to be accessible. So it almost needs to appeal to, yeah, it needs to not be, I guess, pompous is the word.
Is it not then made to lose? Because I get what you're saying in your head, but do you not have a danger then of making it too fast-paced and actiony and it just turns into another one of those types of UFO movies? It's just another action movie with UFOs as the topic. Do you know what I mean?
But I guess,
I get what you mean as well.
I guess that's where, it's a juggling task, isn't it? Because you don't want it to come off bland and just boring. But at the same time, you don't want it to just be one for UFO people. You know, Nope was a little too slow for a lot of people. So it would need to kind of be faster than that. I'm trying to think if there any UFO films have kind of hit that area for me. And I can't think of any.
Do you know what? Like, the neatest one for me, pacing-wise and tone, is probably Signs.
Yeah, Signs is a really good example. And Signs had, it had breathing room to kind of let you feel that weight, right? Almost everyone I talk to who has seen Signs, whether they loved or hate it, we all unanimously agree, and I know you do too, that scene at the birthday party with that alien just sticks with us, and it will stick with us for the rest of our lives, right? Like, it was just so well done. So there's something really potent in doing stuff like that. And I think you absolutely could, but it's not in doing it like the TV series Project Blue Book, which was really, you know, I love the show, but it was really for UFO enthusiasts.
Yeah.
That's all the need to apply.
100%.
Same with that one that was about like the black market trade of UFO materials, which didn't really have many aliens in it. Just like two or three episodes in, it was just, it wasn't going anywhere, you know, you could just tell. So it's not going to capture the audience interest. But this is why I'm so keen on Secret Machines, because I feel like it's a propulsive story. I think audiences have shown that they love stuff like Dan Brown that's kind of light on its foot and not too serious. And of course, Tom Hanks is in there as well. So my brain went straight there.
What about a Breaking Bad style series where over six series, you get someone like in Breaking Bad, Walter White goes from unassuming ill school teacher to criminal mastermind by the end. And it's an incredible evolution to watch. Something like that, where a guy, imagine like a Bob Lazar type story, where a guy gets brought into a program over the course of six seasons, and slowly gets exposed to more and more stuff around this world. And it's really seriously done. And there can be other elements of his life happens round about it. But the core story, instead of being, you know, getting really good at selling crystal meth, is he gets deeper and deeper and deeper into this UFO retrieval program, to the point he's really nerdy scientist at first. I don't even know why I'm pitching this to you, but that maybe that kind of thing where it's...
I mean, that's cool.
People like get more into it. You get more into it and you see them change and become... Do you know what? You could do the classic thing of first episode, you see the dickhead general guy who he's absolutely terrified of. And by the end, the main characters became that guy. He's now the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Beard, and he gets where he's coming from now. Something like that.
I think that would work well. You've got me thinking of the show Sugar on Apple TV. It was a Colin Farrell starring thing, which is just, it's just a detective show about a detective trying to find a girl. And massive spoilers alert. But the show, when it came out, it was a big twist and it had an impact. But if you just Google search it now, it's just in the synopsis. Around episode six, you find out that actually Colin Farrell's character is an alien on Earth in disguise. But by that point, you're so invested. And there's like weirdness throughout the episodes where you're like, why isn't he dying when he's stabbed? Why do all animals love him? Like he's seems to have some connection with people. Like, does he have powers or whatever? But it stays really realistic throughout. So, you know, it could have just gone in a way like, oh, he's just a nice dude. But then the reveal happens and the show doesn't become like stupid for it. It kind of presents you with the question like, and it just steps up a notch, you know? It's just like, oh, you're intrigued and you're invested in the character by that point. So when the twist happens and these crazier parts get introduced to it, you don't switch off because you aren't into UFO stuff. You're more like, no, I'm into this. Like the character's really interesting and I want to keep on kind of watching to see what happens to him next.
Very quick sidebar. Do you ever sometimes watch a movie or a series with the same actor but they're unrelated and like to think how they could work out as being the same series? For example, I like to think of John Wick as a continuation of the Matrix series because they only made three Matrix films. And then it's John Wick, and that's just Neo now in the world where he's basically a cool assassin because the Matrix 4 never happened. That's the way I like
it. There's a particular actor that is in like American dramas, and this actor, or political dramas, sorry. And this actor, he always plays like a Secret Service agent.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the actor's name. It's going to really bug me. But he's in 24 and he's in like the West Wing and stuff like that. But every series, his job is more serious.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm watching those shows and that actor pops up, I just assume that he's getting promoted through.
Yeah, I like that. It just your sugar thing made me think of, imagine Phone Booth at the end of it. The Phone Booth turned into like a, with Colin Farrell, obviously, like a little craft got away. And you'd be like,
oh. Just like the phone box from Doctor Who. It was like excellent a twist.
Yeah, but anyway, that Roswell movie was Roswell from 1994, and it was Kyle MacLachlan. It was Kyle MacLachlan and Martin Sheen. So, yeah, might be worth going back and watching watch at some point.
I'm sure I have.
But yeah, good question, Max. Thank you for the random sidebar on that as well. Matt asks, what do you guys think about what David Grush told Walter Kern about how something would quote-unquote astonish the world in the next year in combination with the event Elizondo said is being researched? He sent me a YouTube clip of this guy Walter Kern on a podcast, and he basically said he spent 10 hours with David Grush. Incredibly intelligent guy. I don't know much more though other than that. And I don't know about the event stuff with what Lou Elizondo is saying just now, because I don't know with that, because I think he's been very like, teasy with it. But I don't know if some of that is just not shooting down stuff he would otherwise maybe shoot down. I don't know. I've had that discussion with you, Dan, about this whole 2025, 2027 thing. I just don't think there's a lot in that.
Yeah, there's a lot that, you know, people like Lou in certain interviews, when asked about something he doesn't know about, he doesn't just BS it. He tends to just go, I don't know about that. Like, yeah. I'll let the experts kind of take it. So not addressing that kind of stuff just kind of tells me, like, one, there might be something, but the interviewer and Lou might be talking about completely different things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's vague enough that you can almost put your own wishes into that gap. So I think we have to be careful with projecting into that, because lots of different people interpret it in different ways. I someone on the X space asked about the asteroid Apophis that's scheduled to kind of come in the next few years, and it's going to be a really close kind of near miss of Earth.
I've seen that, yeah.
But Lou said, no, that's not what he was talking about. But that person thought that's what he was talking about. So, yeah, we all need to kind of be careful in terms of projecting what we want that to be about into that space. Clearly, something is going to happen. But as Lou said in the X space, something always happens. That's just the way that days go. And like we saw with Grush's op-ed, it was delayed. Things change. So who knows what he was talking about until he comes forward and tells us. We really have no idea.
Paul gave us a little bit of a brain dump. Have you been hearing about this supposed 2027 event that has been mentioned by Lou Elizondo and others? What do you think this could be? Clear contact, where UAP make it clear and obvious to us, or is it disclosure? I've heard a couple of wild theories that include perhaps a large alien ship coming clear into view of Earth, where we would all be able to see it. But the craziest one is that something will happen with human consciousness in 2027 that's going to change life forever. The theory suggests that we will all start to develop capabilities to communicate telepathically or some other amazing abilities, and it will change the world forever. This sounds crazy, but it was pretty cool to think about, and wanted to hear what you guys think about this. Cheers, Paul. Second one about us all developing abilities, maybe in a few thousand years' time if we haven't nuked each other. We're just nowhere near as developed as a species as people think. I'm sorry, but look at, just take a step back. And Google, for example, top 10 atrocities in the world right now, right? I saw a news story, this is horrible, where a student in the UK has had a baby, killed it, and stuffed it in a cereal box, right? So for me, as a species, we are not anywhere near, and take that up levels to what's happening across the world, anywhere near developed or ready for, I know that got dark, but yeah, I just... No, we're not anywhere near that kind of paradigm shifting moment. So not for me. However, I do like that idea that, and this would be a great premise, Dan, for one of those kind of, you know, the series, The Leftovers.
I love The Leftovers. Right. So one of my favorite shows.
Very quick premise, folks. Imagine a series totally straight down the line, realistic, proper drama, but the premise that you don't really get to see at first is that in a split second, is it 5% of the world's population?
I think it was like 3.
Yeah,
it was a really low number, wasn't
number,
it?
Yeah. 3% of the world's population literally disappear in an instant, as in pilots disappear from their seat in planes, babies disappear out of prams, you're sitting at a dinner table and your husband and one of your kids disappear. That's the premise, and it's how the world...
2%.
It's how the world has gone on to deal with that, okay? So it's a really, like, down-to-earth drama about a pretty incredible incident. Imagine a series or movie where the only hint of anything UFO-related, but the whole movie's based on this, is that one day, just in the sky, not even that clear, but clear enough, everyone in New York sees a huge craft, still in space, but it's so big, like moon-shaped in daylight, goes by, and that's it. Doesn't land, doesn't stop, it just goes by, and it's picked up by TV cameras, everything, and then just how the world reacts from that, you know, because what can the government say? this thing's just gone by, which is clearly thousands and thousands of feet in length and size, and they have to acknowledge it. And that's literally the whole thing around the movie. That would be quite a cool idea.
So funny you say that. So the book Contact, obviously, you know, what the movie was based on. The movie doesn't go into it so much, but my favorite chapters from the book were literally that. It was just about how the world reacted to the knowledge they're not alone. They haven't made contact yet. The machine's being built and stuff like that. But it goes into how people react and the way countries react and so on and so forth. And it was fascinating.
Is that the same, though, as, like, realistically, the James Webb finds lights on another planet?
Yeah.
We find there is a light going off every 12 hours on and off, like cities. We can't get there. They can't get to us, as far as we know. But we know it's there. And then just how we would react to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a BBC documentary last year, I think it was, maybe the year before, doesn't matter, but it was recent in the last few years. And the entire conceit of the documentary, it was kind of like a mockumentary thing, was it was like interviews with people like Michio Kaku and Brian Cox and, you know, other astrophysicists and stuff, just talking about what would happen if we found out that we weren't alone. And that was kind of intercut with scenes of, you know, scientists detecting a craft that was passing, and it was just an old craft. It was derelict. There was no one on it. But instantly, we had the knowledge that we are not alone in the universe.
I've seen that movie,
and it was just talking about.
It looks like there's nothing on it, but yeah.
But yeah, it was. I remember watching it and thinking, "Oh, this would make a really cool movie or series or whatever." And it's funny that.
Go on.
It's funny that you mentioned The Leftovers. Just after we've talked about, like, do you ever combine shows and stuff? Because The Leftovers, for me, is exactly what the series that Marvel should have made after Infinity War, when
Endgame.
It snapped.
Yeah.
And just live in that space. See how the world changes after that kind of thing happened. Because in The Leftovers, 2%, I think it was like 140 million people disappear. And it changes the world in huge ways, right? Just because they have to figure out, like, there's, for anyone listening, if you haven't seen it, there's never really an answer as to what happened. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have different theories, and you can kind of pick your own theory by the end of the show. It's about the people and how they live in it. And it would be amazing. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because when this question, you read the question, the thing I wrote was a scene from The Leftovers where they had really cool intros. And one of the intro they had was, it was kind of set way back when in a little village. And this pastor was saying, I've worked out the math of when the rapture is going to happen. And everyone's got to climb on their roof at this point. And so you see all the villagers climb on the roof. It's a silent sequence. I'm sure people can find it on YouTube if you just search Rapture and Leftovers. And they climb up and nothing happened. So everyone gets off the roof. And then it happens again, and the guy's like, I got my math wrong, and they go up for another day, and then it happens again, and every time he makes the claim it's going to happen, less and less people go up on their roofs, until eventually it's just this one woman whose family's left her, and she's, you know, covered in rain and mud, and the whole village is mocking her by this point. And it just reminded me of that, you know, the 2027 day, or the 2030, or the 2032, or whatever. There are only so many times that we're going to get on the roof before we just kind of go, you know what, enough with this. And I totally agree with you, by the way, about the not well-developed as a species. I think we have a habit of kind of thinking that what we see in our lives is how the whole world is. And it's not at all. And I implore people to, you know, read books, listen to movies, listen to interviews you wouldn't normally think you're interested in, watch movies from other countries and things like that, so you can see how other people are living, because it's not like us right here right now. You know, we are really privileged to be able to sit in a place with you know, I was gonna say heating, but I know your shed doesn't have heating, but we're relatively safe where we live. Like, everything's safe. There's food in the house. We have running water, stuff like that. And those fundamentals that we think of as everyday things are just not there for just such large proportions of the species. And then on top of that, you've got stuff like the incident you talked about, which is just insane. So yeah, we really need to remember it's not all love and light, and we're not all ready for whatever the next step is, and that might be okay at the same time, you know?
I'm going to make a note this time next year. I'm going to release a book all about what happens after that disclosure occurs, and I'm going to call it After Disclosure.
After Disclosure.
AD, just AD for short, but I'm going to call it After Disclosure.
You should write it under a pseudonym, and just Bryce Abel and Richard Dolan, just as one word, though.
Co-author it, but I wrote it myself, like, just to make it sound really pretentious. pre-order available now, folks. Just PayPal me $100 or £100. You need to pay more in pounds, but that's I like the number. And finally, but thank you again, Paul. Sorry for this. You can tell it's been over 2 hours, 15 minutes, and it's getting late.
Provocative question, though.
Yeah, it is. And Ross finally says, apologies if you've moved on. I'm a few episodes behind. Aren't we all, Ross? But the only person to send to represent mankind at an alien federation has to be the great man, David Attenborough. He's probably the only one they would want as well. Wise, representative of humans' best traits, kind and focused on what matters, our home, and increasingly likely theirs too. Are we voting on this? Winky face. Cheers. Folks, weeks ago we'd said, off the back of someone's question about who would we send to represent humanity in a galactic federation. I've had a few of those through now, so thank you. If anyone wants to send them in, please do. But Dan, David Attenborough, you happy with that?
Love the suggestion, and funnily enough, as soon as he said moved on, I thought David Attenborough, and I thought that was what was going to come up, and it did. So I don't know. It's 9:30. I'm getting my psychic on, apparently.
Yeah, and it's 9:30. I'm getting my I'm up for work in the morning head. So Dan, we'll call it there. Thank you very much for your time. It's been a long one this evening. Is there anything you would like folks to send in ahead of the UAP hearings recording? We're going to preview the actual hearings themselves. Anything you'd like to hear people get in touch with? Or
I think it's always nice to hear what people both expect and would love from the hearings, because the two don't always match up, right? Yeah. So, yeah, let us know what you expect from them, but let us know what you hope from them as well, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like you asked me earlier, one of the questions on from listeners for that is, who are your kind of three, your kind of dream team, if you could pick three people to be there? So I suppose that would be a good one for folks to share over as well.
No David Attenborough in those three, though.
No David Attenborough, not allowed. Although, imagine it was David Attenborough. No, I'm going to bullshit now because it's been too late. Folks, thank you very much for your time, and we'll speak to you very, very soon. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help. You save.